Donald, Reel number 9. I'd like to talk to you now about Jutland, and perhaps you could describe for me, in as much detail as you can recall, the events and their sequence following Engadine leaving Rosyth with the battlecruiser squadron on the evening of the 30th of May 1916.
Yes. It is one of those periods, naturally enough, that would be quite clear in everybody's mind, I think. Because, for a start, we could all sense it was more than just an ordinary sweep. Because not only were the battle cruisers there, all six or eight of us, I've forgotten the exact number, Lion, Tiger, Princess, Royal, Queen Mary, Indefatigable, Indomitable, New Zealand, and another lot of about eight battlecruisers. But we'd been joined by the 5th Battle Squadron, the very magnificent Queen Elizabeth class, Baron Maria, Malaya, and Warspite. Unfortunately, Queen Elizabeth herself was in dock, but we were much more powerful fleet than usual left the force. We knew there was something rather big on hand. We did discover later that the Admiralty itself, who pretty wide awake, crowd of people, you know, they had actually been detecting a good deal of wireless activity over in the Kiel direction. I don't think they could actually read the admiral signals of the German fleet because they'd be in code, and I don't know if it cracked the codes or not, but they were able, with a certain amount of wireless direction finding, to spot the movement of the ships and realize that there was quite a large number of German ships moving in Kiel and evidently making for sea. So that was really at the root of this. Whether they were coming out because they'd heard we were coming out, or vice versa, I don't know, but I think our Admiralty was a little bit ahead of the Germans at the time. And in the meantime, the Grand Fleet up in Scapa Flow were getting up steam like mad to come out. They unfortunately didn't have the same speed as the battle cruisers. So we went, this time there was no question of sweep, we went straight across the North Sea, as far as I can remember, heading straight for the old Schleswig-Holstein coast.
And you were in convoy with the battlecruiser squadron.
Yes. Well, that was... David Beattie knew what he was doing. The conditions were quite suitable for flying. We were already hoist out, and fortunately, it was my turn to fly. We used to take it in a very strict rota. And I was on the aft deck with my old short seaplane number 8359 on the aft deck, all ready to go. And our position then was about 1.5 miles, well, maybe 2 miles in front of the battle cruisers. Get as close to the believed enemy force as we possibly could. And the word came to investigate with aircraft.
Investigate what?
There was some activity just on the horizon. Very shortly after, we could see their funnels, but they hadn't just appeared yet. They were just over the horizon in the direction of Schleswig-Holstein. And just as I got my engine nicely warmed up, unfortunately, a senior flying officer, Flight Lieutenant Rutland, appeared, waved me down, and my observer, and told me that he'd got the captain's sanction that he was to go.
Could you continue this description from that point where you first, when I say you, I mean Engadine, as a seaplane carrier, became positively involved in the activities that were about to take place?
Well, I don't put it this way. We could have a pretty strong suspicion that was virtually a certainty that the enemy fleet was pretty close. ahead of us when we were sent ahead with orders to reconnoitre and report. But we couldn't be sure of that. I mean, that's not our job. I'm perfectly certain that David Beatty knew very well where the enemy fleet was, but what he wanted to know is how many ships there were and what it consisted of, details of what was just over the horizon there, and all we had to do was to go and find out and report back. And that, of course, is... It happened to be my very good luck to be my turn, purely on the rotor, to carry out that very interesting flight, and unfortunately it didn't come off that way, so...
Could you describe in detail this event when you were preparing to take off for a reconnaissance flight?
Oh, just sitting in the cockpit, waiting for instructions, engine warming up, I mean, all clad in flying gear, chain hooked on, ready to hoist. We'd have been in the water and away in about a minute and a half. But, as I say, it was not to be. So my old short seaplane, H359, away she went, but without us. And she made a very good job of it, because they were able to send back very good reports, which naturally we picked up in Engadine as well as the...
You're on.
The accuracy and clearness of the reports sent by the seaplane, I really must record were due to the real skill and care of Rutland's observer, a great chap whose name was Truin, Cornishman. And, as I say, all his signals and messages about the enemy fleet were naturally very carefully recorded in Engadine, and I can vouch personally that they were an excellent report. Very, very accurate, very clear, and quite outstanding.
Can I ask you what Rutland was like as a pilot? What were your estimation of his abilities?
Very good pilot.
Would you like to describe what kind of person he was?
No.
Did you hear any explanations from anyone at all at the time about the events which prevented Campania from joining the Grand Fleet to take part in the
yes.
operation as she would have done?
I know exactly why she didn't join. Somebody omitted to tell her to get up steam in Scapa Flow, and she never left Scapa Flow. That's why she didn't catch up.
Another thing which interests me is, did the pilots on Engadine feel that any more use could have been made of their aircraft after Rutland's flight?
Actually, no, because weather conditions turned a bit bad. As a kind of consolation prize for missing the main flight, I was put out in the aft deck in my Schneider Cup machine to chivvy any Zeppelins which were expected to accompany the German fleet. But as it happens, no Zeppelins put in an appearance, which was perhaps rather a good thing for me, because I'm afraid if I tried to take by the time the sea got up a bit, if I tried to take the little Schneider Cup fighter off, I'm afraid it would be in one more crash like the Thunder and Job, and this time wouldn't have been able to be picked up, because nobody can stop in the middle of a naval battle to pick people up.
Could we talk a bit about Engadine's involvement with Warrior when she was struck? What are your recollections of that?
Oh, that's a very clear picture.
Perhaps you'd like to describe it, then.
Warrior was one of three very old cruisers. Came down with the Grand Fleet. Unfortunately, the Grand Fleet were just that bit slow. And as far as we know, they were definitely late on their rendezvous. I may be wrong, I may be right. But if they'd got there on time, we had the German fleet absolutely cold. As it was, we were only able to chase them right back into their home port, which they never left again. Which may be their idea of victory. But, what was the question, by the way? The Warrior was one of these old cruisers, Warrior, Defence and Black Prince, under the command of Admiral Sir Keith Arbuthnot, was famous when younger for the Nelson Touch. And his instructions, I believe, had been to keep around on the outskirts of the battle, not get too close to the enemy's heavy stuff, because they were very old ships built in the 1890s, and pick up stragglers or survivors. But Nelson Touch doesn't allow for hanging around on the outskirts of a battle, so he sailed in to get a bit closer. And I think I'm correct in saying this, but I heard the captain say he had his glass on the Arbuthnot's flagship, which was either the Defence or the Black Prince. He said, "My heavens," he said, "he's put up Nelson's signal. Engage more closely. Next thing we'll be seeing is England. Expect." And at that moment the mist lifted, and unfortunately there was about two or three large German battle cruisers, only a matter of few thousand yards away, and they simply let the poor old Defence, Black Prince and Warrior have the lot. They didn't let us have anything. Nobody hit us with anything. It's all personally, I think the German gunners thought we were a sort of figment of their imagination. So took no notice of us.
So when did Engadine go to Warrior's help?
Well, what happened was the other two blew up and sank. Warrior went clean out of control with her rudder jammed hard over, and started going round in circles. Our engine room was in a frightful state. Everybody in the engine room was killed with the terrific salvos she'd got, and guns pointing up in the air, the funnels hanging over the side. She was a terrible mess. But they couldn't stop her, because there was nobody in the engine room to stop her, and just for the time being they couldn't get down to the engine room. And unfortunately the rudder was jammed hard over, and she must have been, well, casualties were pretty bad aboard her at the time, and our own captain in Engadine, who was a pretty cool chap and who knew the captain of the Warrior, sent him a sort of semi-private signal. The Warrior sent us a signal saying, "I'm out of control," and he sent a signal, he said, "Suggest you hand train your rudder midships," which they did do. It took a little while, and then she began going in a straight line, and it was just a matter of following her till the clockwork ran down, in other words, till she ran out of steam. And by that time the Germans had all pushed off, and after a good deal of hard work with the small motorboats and getting a light wire aboard her and back and forward, we finally got a cable on board that would pull her, take her in tow.
Did you take any personal part in this?
Oh, heavens, yes, we're all at it. Oh, God knows. I mean, pulling wires on and making them, lashing them onto this, that, anything else. The point was, small converted passenger ships not built to tug. You've got to finally fasten your big wire onto any darn thing that'll hold, an odd bollard here and there. We very nearly tied the wire around the seaplanes. And I'll never forget the first pull of the wire. Keep in mind that Engadine displaced about 1,400 tons and the Warrior was 14,900, with water in it was probably about 19,000. So the very first time, all that happened was a colossal shower of sparks. And she stopped dead. And then she began to move, and Engadine kept thrashing away, and sadly enough, as it sounds, we must have, according to the Admiral Beattie's own dispatches, we must have averaged slightly over 10 knots with her, because we towed her right across the North Sea, which we had all to ourselves by this time. The German fleet had left it, and never saw any ships at all on the way over.
Were there any specific parts of that operation in which you were personally involved that stand out in your mind?
Nothing very outstanding. The only wound I received was nasty graze on the shin from a tin of bully beef that was flung aboard by one of the Warrior's chaps as they were coming aboard when we went alongside to take them off. There must have been about 750 or 800 survivors who were able to take aboard before she sank.
Could you describe for me the evacuation of Warrior later on, just before she sank?
Yes, it was worth seeing, because it was a very well-disciplined one. There was just one horrid moment just before we The captain was a marvellous seaman. He and old Hancock of the ex of the Southeastern and Chatham Railway fairly handled like a bringing alongside a pier, but there was quite a sea running, and the Warrior was half under water, and she started to... Well, she did punch one hole in our stokehold with one of our casemate guns, which one of our firemen sort of saved the situation by stuffing his cap in the hole and shouting to the other chaps, "Come on, give us a hand," and they packed it up. And it wasn't a very easy job, so everybody to lend a hand making odd wires fast to try and hold her tight against the Warrior's side, put down fenders as best we could. It's not a sort of operation a aircraft carrier or warship's really equipped for doing at sea as a rule. But the really nasty moment was just as we were getting ready. There just was momentarily a look. The Warrior gave a nasty sort of shudder. It just looked as she was just going to sink. It was unmistakable, apart from pulling us with her. Just for a moment, there was that slight look on all those chaps' faces. Keep in mind, they had an awful hammering. I mean, the scuppers were running with blood and a lot of casualties. And there might have been a panic. The captain just signaled the bugler. He blew the still. One just took to the still. Every man jack stood to attention. Then they carried on, very orderly manner.